on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
At its core, we are really a legal research platform for the U.S. state trial court system. So if you think about Lexis and Westlaw and the way they focus on sort of court of appeals research, Supreme Court, and also have searchability at the federal level, that's really what we do, but again, focused on that fragmented U.S. state trial court system, which is where all of the litigation in the U.S. actually happens. It is a 30-to-1 ratio between the number of cases filed in state courts compared to every one case filed in federal court. So it's where all of the litigation actually happens. Most of those cases, 99%, don't make it to trial, let alone making it to trial then to appeal, which historically has been sort of the corpus of data that lawyers have been used to researching. And so what we do is just sort of flip the tables and say, it's great to understand the sort of academic research at the Court of Appeals level, but there's also high value in understanding a matter where you're actually litigating in front of the judge that you're litigating, with the way your opposing counsel tends to move their cases forward in the state trial court system. So being able to do some of the same strategic research you might do at the Court of Appeals level, but just really change your microscope into the practical state trial court system where you might be litigating.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about the use of AI for legal research in US legal teams. And for this, I'm joined by Nicole Clark. Now, Nicole is the co-founder and CEO of Trellis. And prior to actually founding Trellis, she was a business and litigation and also labor and employment attorney who handled litigation in both state and federal courts. She graduated with honors from the University of Massachusetts. It's Amherst with a BA in journalism, and she also received a Juris Doctorate from Rutgers School of Law in Newark, New Jersey. Nicole, thank you very much for joining the episode. I'm super excited to talk to you.
So great to be here.
Things are exciting to talk about this, especially because I think that because I'm based in Europe, I oftentimes tend to only think about, you know, the European landscape. So looking at the US landscape, I think it's going to be very interesting. Now, to kick off the episode, I thought I'd start off with a statement that I saw on your website, and perhaps others in other episodes have also made reference to this. But what I noticed is that on the website, it said the following. It said that democratizing access to the law by making state trial court records and legal data more accessible is a necessary step to bringing greater transparency to our judicial system. Now, I think that's obviously like a great statement, and I think a very important one. And it shows what you at Trellis want to do, but also what the problem is, I guess, all in one go. Now, before we actually delve into Trellis itself, I thought we can take a step back and look at the broader problem. So can you maybe tell us about exactly what the problem is that we're dealing with regards to judicial or court data, and maybe especially from a US perspective?
Absolutely. So right now in the U.S. judicial system, you basically have two systems operating at the same time. You have the state court system and the federal court system, and both have trial courts, both have court of appeals, and then roll up to the Supreme Court or the United States Supreme Court. And on the federal side, you have one unified system for the federal courts across the nation. It's called PACER. It's not a particularly innovative system, but it is at least a single interface where you can search and pull up records and information. On the state court side, which is what we focus on Trellis, at the trial court level, it's actually thousands of individual county courts. And so even per each state will have tens of their own county courts, and each of those courts will host their data separately, maintain it separately. Mm-hmm. There's no unification in case types, in judge information, in really the way that they classify any of this information. So on the one hand, from even an individual county, it's very difficult to find any information. You start with having to need a case number to be able to find any information on a county court website. But then if you look sort of macro, it's impossible, absent Trellis really, to be able to search across the counties, across the states, across the nation, to be able to pull up any of this information. So what it is this entirely fragmented system of separated county courts, which makes it nearly impossible to actually have any transparency into the judicial system, the way that it is currently set up, and with the courts having minimal resources themselves to make this data available, accessible, and searchable to people.
Moving to, I guess, to the use of artificial intelligence for legal research purposes, what would you say is like the role of artificial intelligence in this? What is its potential, and also how do you kind of use AI to streamline this better and make it more efficient?
Absolutely. So it's interesting because I think we all hear AI and it's a buzzword, and what does that actually mean? And for legal, I believe it's actually one of the perfect use cases. I mean, there's a huge variety of ways to think about it, but what AI is actually really good at, and it's still getting better and needs to continue to develop as we move forward, but it's really good at taking information and basically being able to go through hundreds of millions of similar pieces of information and to classify that information in a way that a human never could. It's simply too high a volume of data. And in legal, that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with hundreds of millions of records, hundreds of millions of data points. And once you find the pattern, there is a lot of similarity. So it's really the perfect use case for AI. Now, I will tell you, when we first started the company, normally, for the type of AI that we use, which is machine learning, you have to have basically a data set. You have to have a training set to teach the algorithm the way that it is supposed to move forward and continue to classify based on the same patterns. Mm-hmm. And it learns, and then it continues to get better. Now, the problem with that as a starting point from data that's never been classified or structured before is that the training data doesn't exist. So very early on in the company, what we had to do was a huge manual classification effort, which went down to think about all of your different data points on a case. You've got the judge, the parties, the county, the types of motions that were filed, the outcomes of those motions, the disposition of a case, the different dates. So there's so many different pieces that all need to be able to sort of separately mix and match to be able to figure out information and to really create insights. Now, what we had to do originally was really go through and manually classify that information. And a great example is the case type issue that we were talking about, how it's different in every county across every state, let alone across the nation. So what we had to do was basically map it, create our own trellis structure. So we define what a personal injury case is, and then the 1,000 different ways that courts describe a personal injury case, we map that to our own classification of a personal injury matter. That initially was what we needed to do in order to classify huge amounts of data. And we actually had to go really deep. So even on a case-by-case basis, the docket we mentioned, the sort of timeline of events in a case, we had to classify not only at the case level, but actually at the individual docket entry level, which is basically each event in a case. And the reason that we needed to do that is one of the things that we do is judicial analytics. And sometimes judges will sub out and hear motions for other judges that the case is ultimately assigned to, which means we couldn't assign a particular ruling to a judge when it's different to the judge that was assigned to the case, when a different judge may have actually heard that particular motion. So we had to do a classification entry level by entry level. But that's ultimately what allowed us to be able to utilize machine learning. And then from here, it is consistently basically, how do we tweak and continue to make it more accurate and more accurate, you know, really going forward forever. And then the same thing on in terms of AI for the judge analytics. One of the things that we do there is sort of look at each judge and tell you specifically how they rule on important pretrial motions. So if you're in front of that judge, we can look at their data historically and then sort of have a prediction model of how they're likely to rule in a certain motion in a certain practice area, and then basically continue to drill down additional layers. So there's a lot of different, there's a lot to come in terms of the analytics, but starting with basically just the mapping of the system, the structure of the system, and continuing to basically bring in hundreds of millions of data points consistently every day, have those properly classified and structured, and then continuing to layer analytics up on top of that data.
Yeah, and in that sense, I mean, I should have asked you probably earlier, like to explain a little bit more about Trellis, because obviously you're explaining like, you know, the workings of Trellis. So maybe let's do that first. And then because you made a number of very interesting, you know, remarks in this sense. But before I get to that, let's introduce Trellis first so that we have a bit of an introduction.
So Trellis, at its core, we are a legal data company, and we specifically focus on the U.S. state trial court system. And again, that's that system that otherwise is fragmented across thousands of courts. So I like to think of us as sort of a Google for the state trial court mm-hmm. system, where you can research by judge or legal issue or opposing counsel or any combination of those. You want to look up your opposing counsel and your judge and see the other cases that they've appeared before the judge before, all kinds of different ways to gain insights into the state trial court system. And then we go really granular. So we go on a case-by-case basis, including down to the documents filed in those cases that you can actually pull those up. And then sort of a zoomed out view of trend and analytics across counties, across the states. But it's really a legal research platform for the U.S. state trial court system. So if you think about Lexis and Westlaw and the way they focus on sort of court of appeals research, Supreme Court, and also have searchability at the federal mm-hmm. level, that's really what we do, but again, focused on that fragmented U.S. state trial court system, which is where all of the litigation in the U.S. actually happens. It is a 30-to-1 ratio between the number of cases filed in state courts compared to every one case filed in federal court. So it's yeah. where all of the litigation actually happens. Most of those cases, 99%, don't make it to trial, let alone making it to trial, then to appeal, which historically has been sort of the corpus of data that lawyers have been used to researching. And so what we do is just sort of flip the tables and say, it's great to understand the sort of academic research at the Court of Appeals level, but there's also high value in understanding a matter where you're actually litigating in front of the judge that you're litigating, the way your opposing counsel tends to move their cases forward in the state trial court system. So being able to do some of the same strategic research you might do at the Court of Appeals level, but just really change your microscope into the practical state trial court system where you might be litigating.
Yeah, exactly. And then in terms of the working of Trellis itself, so you said it's like a Google kind of for the Google Analytics kind of for state trial data. Is it literally like if a practitioner would be interested in to know a little bit more about, I guess, the judge in a particular case, they would literally use it like a search bar. They would fill that out and they would get like all the relevant data following that specific query.
Absolutely. So we actually, it's funny, there's a lot of similarity between Trellis and Google. We had engineers that had come over from Google wanted to make it really intuitive. Yeah. We wanted to basically say, if you know how to use Google, it's very difficult to take the time for attorneys to decide they want to train on a piece of software. So how can you make it as easy as possible? So for instance, if you were to search a judge on our system or anything, if you're searching in our search bar, you're always searching four buckets of data. You're searching rulings. So in this case, it would be rulings by that judge. You're searching dockets. That would be high level, all of that judge's cases. You're searching documents, which would be in the judge case, documents filed in cases where that judge is presiding. And you're searching verdicts in a judge case. That would be all the cases that have gone to verdict where that judge was presiding. But now you can take that away from the judge lens and say, I want to do that for a specific law firm, or I want to search the same thing, but I want to search by legal issue. And then again, the mixing and matching yeah. of those different aspects are really where you can just surface insights that can be incredibly valuable.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting because I also, I recently spoke to, there was this legal tech founder and we were talking about exactly this issue of like making legal tech intuitive, because a lot of the products that are being offered to practitioners or to anybody else in the legal domain, they're often not intuitive. And like what he particularly said was like, you know, lawyers aren't interested in learning a whole new system that is only for that system. Like let's reuse, like for instance, Word or Microsoft office in general. And like you're saying exactly the same, which is super interesting. And it also sounds extremely fancy, to be honest, to say that you've Googled for Google for the lawyers.
I think that historically the bar for technology and legal has just been set really low. I think that really talented engineering hasn't entered legal. It's not the super sexy Uber for this. And I think that for a while you had products that were not designed by with a lawyer involved in the product process, right? So it's designed by engineers where a lot of legal practice is very nuanced. And so you need the combination. You need the combination of how do we make products that are super easy, that delight, where you have really talented engineering, and then combine it with someone who does that day-to-day and what they actually need. And that's how better products are going to continue to be made in legal and how we're really going to innovate the system, or we need to, because otherwise attorneys aren't going to use the product. And then we have, you know, a graveyard of legal tech that hasn't been able to break through the system.
Yeah, that would be a very big shame. And also I'm interested, like, I mean, we're talking about the fact that it's, you know, a good idea to make sure that legal tech products that we're creating are actually being used and they don't end up in a graveyard, like you said. Like, what has the response been from legal practitioners, but maybe also from, I guess, from the more the judicial side of the industry? Like, what have the responses been?
Let's talk about the judicial side for a moment, because it's really interesting. I think when I started the company, I really thought I wondered how judges were going to react to this. It is a level of transparency that hasn't existed previously. And what I found was that there wasn't as much pushback as I initially was concerned about. What I found with judges were that I think at this point there is a recognition that the data does exist. The data is out there. The technology is at a place now where this is possible. It wasn't previously, now it is. And so for judges, they can either push back and say that, you know, this isn't what they would hope for, or they can see what the attorneys are seeing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've seen. I've seen the judges' perspective simply, great, I would like to see what the attorneys see. And then also, I hope that there's some, and I do believe that depending on the judge, there's some introspection there where they look at data and maybe it's something where there was unconscious bias where they wouldn't have recognized it previously. But when shown the data, one of the things that we do is break down sort of by moving party. Does a judge's analysis change if a plaintiff brings a particular motion as opposed to defendant? And there's always some interesting insights there. And I think for judges, it can be a tool where they can continue to really think about their rulings and ask themselves some hard questions at times, because the data is the data. And that's the other thing that I would say is we're not saying this judge is good or this judge is bad. We're simply showing the data. We're not making any specific commentary on it. Mm-hmm. There's no sort of rating system, 5 stars or anything like that. We're just simply saying, these are their cases. These are the types of cases that they hear. This is sort of how fast cases move in their court. All of that information, which is simply what the data says, without taking any stand one way or the other. That's for the attorneys to take in the information and decide.
Yeah, and from the attorney's perspective, I guess the response has also obviously been extremely positive.
It's always interesting, and this is going to be with any technology product, is you make assumptions on how your users are going to use the product, and so many times it's wrong. So it's great. You have to create something, and then you have to watch your users and let them surprise you with what they actually wanted you to build and continue to make it better for them. Mm-hmm. But one of those things has been really interesting. You know, we created the judicial analytics and the searchable system. And we absolutely see attorneys at the start of case looking up their judge and utilizing that hard data at a time in the case where it's really important. But what we actually see is the lawyers coming back to the search engine, and they're utilizing the search engine heavily, hundreds of searches a day, depending on what they're doing. And that's where the folks that are actually litigating, the associates, the support staff, everyone, the partners that are in fact actually doing more litigation than simply business development, they tend to live in the search, which is really interesting to us. And we might not have guessed it when we first created the product.
No, that is super interesting. But I can also imagine that maybe there's some more critical voices also, in the sense that, okay, so we've got like a search engine in place. But I can imagine that there is like a maybe an argument, or that there are arguments being put forward that these systems are replacing, in a way, I guess, I would say practitioners, but also in a way also judges. I mean, there's kind of an overlap in this sense. Do you hear like a lot of these types of comments, or?
It definitely, and I'd say very early on in the company, we heard it a lot more. I almost refer to it as the Terminator conversation.
The sorry for bringing it up.
And it's really interesting. I think there are aspects of law where, depending on your practice, you are, potentially that there is software that could automate what you do. So, for instance, contract drafting and review. I think that's a great use case for AI, where the role of lawyers that review contracts will likely continue to change over the next few years dramatically as more and more technology gets adopted. At the litigation level, which is where we are, I think this is my perspective, right? And there's always voices on both sides, but it takes a human. At the end of the day, as long as we're talking about human judges, and that's another aspect we can talk about, but it takes a human to convince a human. And there are so many nuanced ways. So really, for litigation, what we're doing is simply giving better tools to the lawyers to be able to advocate better to make a more persuasive argument. And I would say AI has come a long way in even the last few years, but it is nowhere near being able to replace litigators and all of the twists and turns that are still fact-based and still contextual, that lawyers need data to make better decisions, but I don't see anytime soon that what litigators do can be easily automated.
Yeah, no, I think that's indeed, like, you know, there are two sides, of course, of this whole debate, and some will always say with the no side and the other side, some will always say nay and some will always say yes. But you also mentioned artificial intelligence for judges themselves, or kind of replacing judges. Is Trellis trying to move that way also with the data that you guys have? Is that something that you have in mind?
So no, in terms of... So there's a few levels there. I'm equally as fascinated by it. I think the question itself is an important question that we should be asking ourselves. And in fact, I think we should be going further, which is starting to look at the data. What if we created algorithms, fed the algorithm all of the historical decisions, and then watched alongside humans what the algorithm would have decided? And for a number of years, really watched that. And I think that could be really interesting. But we would need that data. We would need to, without it having an impact on people's life, their liberty, their property, until we really have an understanding of what those implications are. And I don't think we're anywhere near that yet. I don't think the data is there. So I wouldn't at this point say we should automate what a judge does. I think there are way too many implications there that are extremely important. Do I think it's an interesting question, and what I'd love to see the data for the next 5 years, if we had an algorithm alongside judges and just simply look at the differences? 100%. I would love to see that. Do I think that we're going to get there anytime soon? There's a lot of people that have a vested interest in us not getting there, and I think it's important that we don't. For at least enough time to really be able to make sure when you've got huge rights at stake, yeah. I think it's not something we should sort of be cavalier in saying that it can be automated. So no, I don't expect that to happen anytime soon, but I think the question itself is really fascinating. And I love to continue to sort of think about what that would look like and what are the different sort of ethical implications that we would want to think about if and when we move that way. Even thinking about it sort of towards lower stakes, we thought about it towards minor, small claims, mediated events. I think that could be really interesting too, but we need to start collecting data long before we put that into practice.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting that you say that, because it's definitely an issue, of course.
I think AI is great at your repetitive tasks where there's a high level of pattern taking place. I think once you introduce a bunch of these nuances, we simply need to sort of watch. And then we need to have more control over the algorithm, especially if that we're thinking about utilizing sort of AI that continues to learn. Sometimes it's difficult to tweak that or to have a human be able to know how to tweak to get a particular outcome. And what do we do in a situation where we start to see particular outcomes that we think are unjust and we wouldn't have a way to directly understand how we could change the algorithm to sort of avoid that effect? And I think there's just some really interesting questions there, but fascinating to think about.
No, definitely. And well, since we're talking about this anyway, I'm of course very interested to know what plans you have for the future for Trellis in that regard. Like what do you foresee for like the next or the foreseeable future in terms of like further developing the
absolutely platform? So one, on a core level, continuing to really grow our coverage. So as we mentioned, for us, gathering and aggregating and structuring this data is a county by county effort for us. So currently, we have 15 states live on our system, 18 that will be shortly. And we're really working, we try not to release a state until we cover a certain sort of amount of the population in that state. So what are the biggest counties and how can we provide coverage that is going to be sufficient to say, okay, we cover the state and then continue to backfill with the smaller counties as we move forward. So coverage is a huge aspect of what we do, data acquisition. The goal is really to cover the entire nation by the end of this year, early 2023. So we are extremely aggressive in data acquisition and coverage. On the flip side of that, continue to make the product better for our existing users. So in the way that Lexis and Westlaw really do a great job at the Court of Appeals level, I like to think of Trellis as really sort of owning the state trial court space. Ultimately, the trial court space, bringing in the federal data as well, because that's already structured, so it will be an easy add. But when you're thinking about trial court data, whether it be individual cases, records, information, or data via API, that you think of Trellis as really the authority on state trial court data. And some of the newer features that we've released are an alerting system. So if you want to track legal issues, not only cases and how those are moving forward, of course you can do that, but actually tracking legal issues. So if there's a niche issue or there's new legislation and you want to watch how that's moving through the courts, you can go ahead and get notified on that. Very similar to Google Alerts, you'll get an email. We also recently released verdict analytics. So we have the ability for all the cases that have gone to verdict in the counties that we cover. For any search that you do, we give you basically the range of lowest verdict, highest verdict, and then what the average is. But we also give the median because what we found is the average is almost always thrown off by a very large verdict or a very small verdict. And so the median ends up being a closer proxy to what average might be. But one of the interesting things we do with that search is any search that you run, you're doing those. So if you change it to counsel, if you change it to a particular expert, you're pulling up the analytics of what cases where that expert has testified, what the range of verdicts are there. So there's so many ways to think about that. And what I see us doing moving forward is really continuing to develop this data, to provide this data, not just in legal, but to other industries as well, to help them with decision-making. And there's a lot to talk about there. But continuing to layer analytics on top of the data, you know, really continuing to listen to our users and to what would make their lives easier. What's their wish list? Sort of, if you had a magic wand and you wish Trellis could do X, what is that? And then how do we help continue to build and iterate and make the product better as we move forward?
No, super interesting. And of course, I definitely want to also touch upon what you just said of how you can use this data for other industries, because I also, in preparation for this episode, listened to the Law Next podcast that you were part of a couple of months ago, I think. And I remember you mentioning something there. So that was definitely a question I had in my mind. What have you got in mind for this? And what do you imagine in terms of other industries using the data?
Absolutely. So it's interesting. You know, I came from being a litigator. The product was really created out of my own frustration that I couldn't access basic information on the cases that I was appearing on. And so I thought of it very much from a litigator's perspective in creating the platform. But it's been really interesting to watch use of the product from other industries. So we have basically a free trial. You can come to our website and start a free trial and sort of dig into the data yourselves and determine whether it's valuable. And what we started to see was all kinds of other industries signing on. So, you know, we have a sign-up process and we ask someone if they're, you know, what practice area they're in. And if they say they're not an attorney, then we ask what industry they're a part of. What we started to see was real estate, insurance, financial services, all of these industries that I didn't initially have any assumption would be utilizing the data regularly. And what we watched is each industry uses the data a little bit differently and different aspects of the data. But there's all of this data that happens at the state trial court level that you might not think about unless you're in one of those industries, and then you'll get it. Oh, so for instance, property management, all of your landlord-tenant evictions, all of those take place in the state trial court system. Okay. So that's a huge data set. For employee references, checking an employee to see if they've sued other corporations in the past. So there's all of these interesting property, you know, real estate utilizes it often to look up individual properties to see if there's liens or litigation or any other information when they are representing a particular property. So there's all of these ways that we never thought about that we're watching other industries start to adopt and utilize our data. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, we're focused on the legal vertical right now, but as we move forward, I see this data as doing what the way that we should use data, which is we should use it to make better decisions. And that's not simply limited to legal, but instead that goes across industries where this data can help give some insights. And additionally, we can provide this data, not, you know, we have our end user platform, your sort of Google for the state trial court system with the different analytics and features. But what we can also do is map this data directly into other platforms for other industries that use this piece or want to only look at verdicts on this particular case type or whatever the case may be. But insurance is a huge example where that is an industry that is entirely state court regulated and that historically has had a black box on what happens when cases actually go to trial. They see the claim side, they see the settlement side, but there are massive business decisions to be made based on what happens and how should they think about policy writing and underwriting when they have information at the state court level. So there are, it's one of my favorite things is to continue to watch how other industries utilize our data and to think about how really with the same data set, we can simply repackage it to the very specific needs of the industry and be able to create a very valuable product for those industries as well.
Talking also about, I guess, some of these alternative ways of using Trellis, I was also wondering, and maybe that's also where we can move slowly to the wrap up of the episode, that is, obviously, like this access to court data is one issue, but do you see any other issues in terms of the judicial system or the legal industry in general, like more towards, I guess, the part that Trellis is kind of addressing, that you would want to address in the future, you think other, aspiring entrepreneurs should address in that regard?
The funny thing about legal is it is such an open white space that really needs entrepreneurs to come in and to innovate. And I would say that to lawyers that are thinking about leaving practice, that there are just so many pieces. And we're talking about individual pieces that could themselves each be giant businesses. Like, you know, we're tackling this massive thing, but you can make a better NDA and that can be something that's massively utilized, you know, across the nation. There are so many little pieces where technology can really help attorneys. And it's simply, you know, in thinking about it, it's almost the sky's the limit in terms of we're talking about an industry that has resources, that utilizes a ton of data and that utilizes technology just not well, that really just hasn't adopted it yet. And all of the products that are really changing other sort of antiquated industries can come in and make attorneys' lives better. And then you have the other side of that, which is that's the attorney side, where they desperately need better technology and to really be exposed to what technology should be like, rather than the sort of tools that lawyers have historically sort of put up with, not knowing that really they should expect better. Then you have the other side, which is really the consumer side, the access to justice side, where you have such a massive amount of folks that have legal needs that aren't being met because they can't with the current resources, yeah. Which is, it needs to be solved by technology because it's not something that can be scaled with the current system of the way that attorneys bill and make money. And so I'd say, We're focusing on the trial court side, but there is every piece in between for every practice area that could be helped. And then for society as a whole, we need to fix access to justice. And that, I think, has the greatest possibility of being solved by technology. And I'm excited to see what other folks are continuing to do in that space.
I would also agree with that. And then I think on that note, also, I want to thank you very much, of course, for taking the time once again to talk more about Trellis, but about the topic of AI for legal research and pretty much everything that goes beyond that also. So no, thank you very much.
Thanks so much. It was awesome being here. Really appreciate it.
Now, before you go, Trellis is providing the Law of Tech listeners with a complimentary 14-day access to its state trial court research and analytics platform. Visit trellis.law/freetrial/activate/tlotpodcast to get started today. And of course, I will also add a link to this in the description to this podcast episode.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review as it helps others discover the show. And don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast.